Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show
on the Athletic Podcast Network. Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
You try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I have tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Here, as always, with Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. Gentlemen, we got NBA Finals time. NBA Finals time, man. It's an exciting time of year. We got Boston. We got Golden State. We watched that game last night, and that's been well chronicled, I think, at this point on this podcast network, how that went down. So we're not going to hit the rewind button too much in terms of how the Celtics survived. We want to spin it forward. But immediate quick thoughts before we get into, we're going to do five questions, break this thing down from every single angle and see how you guys feel. But immediate thoughts to the matchup, Warriors, Celtics, what do you think?
It is an intriguing one, I think, because you know, the Warriors were more dominant in their run through the West. I mean, they won five games, whereas, you know, Boston had a couple seven-game series. You know, the Warriors are the public team. I think that's probably why they're the betting favorite in Vegas. But Boston, historically, and we'll probably get into this, does give the Warriors trouble and are really well-built, you would think, to defend the Warriors. So, It profiles as a really good series that should go deep.
This version of the Celtics played the Warriors once during the regular season, and they won by 32. 32? 22. 22. I can't add. I can't subtract, actually. I don't even know the difference between adding and subtracting, apparently.
when we're saying this version of Boston, though, is that just because since they've gotten better?
The post and also they had Derek White. I mean, they played in mid-December. They played again mid-March.
Derek White was horrendous.
Derek White had 0 points on 0-for-8 shooting.
Yes, he did. I put that in my preview. We can get.
Can
to
we
that
contextualize this real quick? And hopefully, I don't derail things. But is this the game where Steph only played 14 minutes?
Yeah, this is when Marcus Smart injured his
foot. Oh, that's the injury
yes.
game.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And the other time they played was mid-December, and that was a Warriors 4-point win, which dropped Boston to 14 and 15. And getting past the fact that I can't do math, I don't think the regular season results mean anything for projecting the finals because of all the context that we just provided. I'm with you guys. I think Boston's defense is kind of engineered to play against anyone, especially an offense with the most dynamic shooting point guard to ever touch a basketball.
I never think that the regular season record necessarily tells us plenty, but the tape does, and there's a lot of tape in both those games. I rewatched both of them. I was at both the games, and there's a lot, and we'll get to it in our five questions, but. You could take a lot of data from, I think, what we saw, at least, you know, from the film perspective.
First of all, Fred, before we keep it moving, I didn't properly introduce you. I mean, for me to overlook the long and storied history that you have as a beat writer of the Boston Celtics was not fair. How long were you on that beat again?
I was on that beat for as long as you can possibly be on a beat without covering a game. So I came on, they
Quick
lost.
Quick story. Yeah, tell the people.
They lost the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals on like a Friday, I think. And my first day was that Monday, 3 days later, jumping on at masslive.com. And I was covering the Thunder previously. And then I left the Friday before media day. So I
Which
did
job
a,
was that?
That was when I went to The Athletic.
The Athletic,
as you
okay.
know them.
Nice.
And so I was there for 3 months, but I really was unintentionally the worst employee ever because I got there, and as you guys know, you get to you get to a job, I'm like, you have your vacation planned for August. So I was like, you know, when I took the job, I had no intention of leaving. So I get there, I cover summer league, I take vacation, and then, you know, then I'm gone.
All right, I didn't mean to put you out in the streets like that, but that always cracks me up.
It's true. It's unbelievable how nice the people were there. They could have killed me on the way out, and they were so nice.
Well, they dealt with Jay King, so they, you know, they've been through a lot. All right, let's get into our five questions. You know, fairly, you know, generic look, I guess, at it, but we are going to dive deep and get your guys' thoughts. Number one, let's just look at key matchup, and it's fine if we have crossover here, but Slater, I will throw it to you. If you got a, you know, spotlight, you know, and look at the boxing approach to this thing, mano a mano, what are you looking at in terms of a key matchup?
Yeah, we could go 25 directions almost, but I think everything starts with the Met stars. So I think on either side of the floor, you're talking Wiggins guarding Tatum. And we saw Wiggins against Luka in the West Finals. And, you know, that he's going to shoulder that load. And they're going to allow him to, I think, mostly during large chunks of the games, operate in a one-on-one scenario. And, you know, it's on him to try to make Tatum inefficient. Tatum can have inefficient games. Didn't he have one? He was like 3 of 18 at one point against Miami or something.
He did,
if,
yeah.
If you force him into tough jumpers regularly, that's a win. Even if
physicality too, he's physical himself, but he does sometimes for some reason, you know, react negatively to physicality.
It's that wristband or whatever he wore last night, the Kobe one, right? He kind of has that. I think at times, like, you know, it's going to look really sweet if I stroll into this 19-foot fadeaway and bury right. it in his
spinning
eye.
Fadeaway, yeah.
Yeah, but so, you know, that's important. The Warriors need Wiggins to do the same thing he did, you know, not only to Luka, but really go all the way through the playoffs. It's just make life relatively difficult for stars in one-on-one settings. Other side, Smart on Curry. To me, you got to just have somebody at the head of the snake. Dylan Brooks, you know, Fred, you watch it. Like, you know how Memphis loves that Dylan Brooks matchup. He's going to navigate screens. He's going to, you know, touch you the whole way. He's going to annoy you. He's going to, you know, at least be somewhat cognizant of all the off-ball tricks and actions. Well, Marcus Smart is that, like, times four. But Marcus Smart had a really bad ankle twist, and he had a foot sprain at the start of the conference finals. He was talking last night. He said he was, what, 65-70%. So you got to be relatively healthy to chase Steph Curry around for 2 weeks. So I'm just looking at his health.
Fred, does that one land with you, or are you looking another direction?
No, that one lands with me completely. I mean, just adding on to Slater, the thing with Wiggins guarding Tatum, I mean, part of the reason that he was good against Luka is not necessarily because he limited him. It's because he did a good enough job guarding him one-on-one that the Warriors could stay at home against the other shooters on Dallas.
Good enough, by the way. As great as Wiggins was, I think we got to remember that the numbers were still bonkers. But yes, very solid.
Well, good enough against Luka is unbelievable. I mean, that's the highest comp. Luka is such a tremendous player. You're not stopping Luka. All you can do is hope you guard him well enough that he succumbs to your game plan. And that is exactly what Wiggins did. I mean, he did the exact job that he was supposed to do, and that was how the Warriors were able to play it, where they turned Luka into more of a scorer than a facilitator. I think Tatum's biggest development this year is just the way that he goes through his reads. We saw it a number of times, even in game seven, where he just knows where to look now. When the double team comes, he knows how to find a guy and make the right, correct, and quick read. When a guy cuts, he knows where to look and he knows where to find that guy. He's excellent at the intuitive passes now. And if you have somebody who can guard him one-on-one, similarly to how Wiggins did with Luka, I think it just kind of, you're right, you can end up with him potentially taking, you know, I'm putting on air quotes, bad shots, because he's capable of making bad shots. Like he could take seven pull-up 19 footers and he could hit five of them in a night. That could happen in game one potentially. But if you're able to guard him that way, then you don't have to worry about the other shooters the Celtics have out there. You don't have to worry about the other potential secondary playmakers the Celtics have out there for the same degree. I mean, for my matchup to watch, I was just going to say, Boston's bigs against whatever the Warriors are doing on the perimeter. You know, Robert Williams did not look like himself in game seven.
Not at all.
And he's he's another guy who's been dealing with injuries.
Like really bad.
Yeah, he looked really bad. And, you know, I have absolutely no idea if that's something that's going to smoothen out over the next 3 days and he's going to be looking like regular old Robert Williams in game one. But Boston likes to play with Williams and Horford together. And they like to make it so, like, I imagine if that's what they're doing and everybody's healthy, you have Horford on Draymond and he can guard the back ends of those Draymond screens and all that. And he can venture out to the perimeter and do an excellent job, or he can drop back and do an excellent job. And then you have Williams on the weak side. But like, if Robert Williams isn't capable of helping from the weak side, like he does when Golden State gets downhill, it's just a different game. And when Golden State goes really small, I wonder how that means the Celtics will want to react.
Well, you know, thankfully for the Warriors, Draymond Green was doing some voodoo stuff in this last couple of days. You know, you think about it, he comes out and tells the TNT crew that he thinks the Warriors are going to be playing the Celtics. He pisses off the Heat just enough to inspire them to force a game seven, which when you unpack all of it, you kind of look at that and go, all right, those are the kinds of things you never know if they actually played any real part. But lo and behold, the Celtics that, you know, who were already battered and bruised and limping to this East Finals finish line have to play another tough game and now don't have the kind of turnaround they could have had if they finished it off in six. I will say, just to finish on this first question, matchup wise, the Jaylen Brown versus whoever it is matchup is going to be interesting. You assume it'd be Klay Thompson. Klay to start. I talked to an executive last night for one of those kind of anonymous pieces that Josh Robbins and I are going to do with our guy Darnell Mayberry. And the exec made the point that he was looking at Draymond and just wondering how the Warriors are going to, you know, kind of execute him and use him defensively. You know, might they throw him at Jaylen at times? You know, especially if you have a Robert Williams on the floor that is not the rim threat, you know, because he's hobbled that he typically would be. Just the Draymond uncertainty, which is what he does to opposing offenses when, you know, you don't know when he's coming and where he's coming from. And then Jaylen in general being a guy where when we talk best players in this series, of course, we're going to go Steph, we're going to go Jason. You know, Jaylen is not only incredibly talented, but proud as hell. And you know, wouldn't shock me if he ended up having some nights that, you know, in the office, in these finals that are better than Tatum.
To your point, Warriors put Draymond on Jalen Brunson, which I think was a big surprise to Dallas in the last series. And, you know, a lot of that was because Dallas likes to run some guard-to-guard screen action. I think the Warriors wanted to shut that up a little bit. They will happily, the Warriors will always use Draymond Green creatively, and they don't care positionally. They just, what matchup means he can make the most defensive impact. Okay, he's guarding that person, and then they'll figure out the matchups around that.
Right, all right. Guys, moving on here, I'm going to switch up the questions a little bit just because I think it flows a little bit better. Second question about these finals. Let's get into the numbers a little bit. Is there a stat to watch, in your opinion, that speaks volumes about this matchup and what might happen here?
Yeah, I'm going with the turnover rates. Like the Warriors are turning the ball over on 15% of their possessions in the playoffs. The Celtics are turning the ball over on 14.6% of their possessions in the playoffs. It's basically the same. They turn the ball over in differently weird ways. Like I don't necessarily like it when we characterize the Warriors' turnovers as thoughtless or synonyms of that word.
You're one of those people who get defense about the Warriors. They're sloppy as hell, Fred.
No, but here's the thing. Yeah. The passes that look sloppy when Steph throws it right into a defense, they're the same passes. That mentality, that sort of play, the willingness to make that play also allows for the same stuff that we refer to as beautiful offense. When Steph like sifts it through two defenders and finds Otto Porter in the corner. Like it's the same thing. You don't get the beautiful pass without the risk of the turnover. So like that's baked into the way that they specifically play. But with Boston's turnovers, sometimes it's like, look, I love watching Jaylen Brown. I think he's an excellent player. But sometimes it's just like for like 2 seconds, he just forgot how to dribble. Like his hand just stopped moving up and down right in relation to the ball. And it's very weird. And I wonder how the turnover battle is going to play out in this series, because Boston is capable, if Golden State shifts into sloppy for them sort of a sort of game, and I guess I sort of oversold it because there are certainly certain games where they'll turn it over 20 times and you're like, what the heck is happening here? But Boston's defense is capable of getting into passing lanes, is capable of fighting over screens and making things uncomfortable, getting into the right places. And if they can get out and they can move and they can score off of those turnovers, that's a big deal. But the problem is that they can't just like let dribbles go flying everywhere too. So I'm really curious to see how that's going to play out, because I think we kind of have a perception of the Warriors being this extremely high turnover team, which they are. They were 29th in the league in turnover rate during the regular season. And a lot of those are live ball turnovers, which is a much bigger problem than just stepping out of bounds. But you know, Boston is in the playoffs is basically doing the same thing.
Right.
So I'm curious.
Listen, anybody who's watched Ime Udoka's pressers knows how frustrated he's been by the turnover side of their game. I mean, the other night, Jaylen Brown had a bunch. Ime pulled him aside, I think at halftime, essentially, you know, told him to shut it down. We can't have any more of this. And then I thought it was fascinating when Jaylen was asked about that exchange. So, you know, Ime had shared the exchange in the press conference. When Jaylen was asked about it, he almost seemed like, you know, had this kind of vibe of like, don't pick on me, because he told the reporters, he goes, no, I think Ime's message was to the whole team. It wasn't just me doing it, you know. So these guys they know it's part of the identity and they're trying to fix it. And that is certainly,
You know who leads the playoffs in turnovers by 18 turnovers more than anybody else?
Tell me.
Jason Tatum.
Wow. Look at you breaking narratives.
77 turnovers in 18 games. Including some really bad ones in that Heat series. But, you know, and you look at the splits, Celtics 12 playoff wins, 12 turnovers a game. Celtics 6 playoff losses, almost 17 turnovers a game. They're much more beatable when they're turning over because you don't want to go against their half-court defense, right? And it's the same with the Warriors. I mean, they're much better defensively when they're not giving up three-on-twos, you know, the other way, when they're set. So Fred is right. Like, the turnover battle in this series, it might mirror basically, you know, whoever wins and loses. And for the Warriors, you know how there's always an adjustment to the, you know, maybe in the first two games of a series to what your past series is compared to, you know, your current one, where I think teams really struggle with the Warriors offense in like game one and game two because it's just so different than the offenses they were playing.
Right.
The Warriors just played a team that does not turn you over and doesn't turn it over. And I just think this will profile to them closer to Memphis. And Memphis gave, you know, the Warriors much bigger problems because they're longer, they're more athletic, they're more active, but they're also sloppier on the other end. So just that adjustment in the first couple of games is something to watch. If you guys could, you look like you wanted to say something. I was going to go to the stat that I was going
to. No, tell me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Well, I was going to. I'm flipping away from turnovers for the stat.
You good. Let's hear your stat.
Yeah, no, I wrote this is the one I use in the preview that I wrote, which, by the way, people can go on The Athletic and read. But so Andrew Wiggins and Kevon Looney are tied for the NBA lead in the playoffs for offensive rebounds. They both have 42 offensive rebounds. It's, particularly Wiggins, crazy on the glass. And I just, Boston doesn't protect their defensive glass that well. They were 16th in the regular season. Even though they're really big, as we mentioned, they're not that good of a rebounding team. They've only, you know, rebounded 71% of opposing misses in the playoffs. That's not that great. So I just think second chance points, because I do think the Warriors, as we mentioned, are going to struggle at times to score in the half court. But if they can get out and transition off turnovers, and if they can just, if Looney can keep just getting those, just, you know, rebound kickouts for threes, and Wiggins, there's a play in the game that they won in December. It was the first play of the game, first play of the matchup this season. Wiggins has Smart on him on the weak side, and he just kind of sneaks past him for a rebound tip back. And that's the kind of stuff that Wiggins can do, because opposing scouting reports say he's the least threatening guy. Don't worry about Andrew Wiggins. But Andrew Wiggins is one-time 20-point-per-game scorer, and he has found different ways to impact the game. One of those is he's a really good offensive rebounder in these playoffs, and that's my stat to watch.
Yeah, one of the reasons for that, too, is because in series past, they've hit a lot of small defenders on him, and he has done an excellent job when he's had a small on him just reading when to crash and come in and get a tap out or grab a loose ball or something like that. Also, like, man, he was just so much more athletic than anybody against Dallas. Like, he was just so obviously the most athletic guy out there. Wait, Slater, I want to ask you something about somewhat in relation to Wiggins, since we think he's going to be kind of the main guy defending Tatum. How do you think Golden State, like, team-wise, guards Tatum? What approach do you think they take?
You know, I think they switch it up, as we saw against Luka, right? I mean, they joked about Mike Brown being, like, you know, defensive coordinator in the booth with Draymond Green as the middle linebacker. But especially when we would sit up close in Dallas, it's in Memphis, it's crazy to watch the way they in-game switch up their look. You know, and Mike Brown, he'll go hands up, basically, and it'll be like a box and one, and obviously they'll guard screens differently. Sometimes they'll blitz it, sometimes they'll switch. I think, you know, I do think this series has a chance to devolve into, like, kind of a switch everything small ball environment, especially if Horford isn't doing well in space and if Rob Williams is impacted. But mostly I think one-on-one, but I do think, depending on who's on the court next to Tatum, I think they'll selectively double and just, you know, maybe shade more attention his way. The first possession that Derek White was on the court against the Warriors this season, you can see Mike Brown get up from his seat, and Kuminga is on Derek White. And, like, a lot of times when Kuminga's on the floor, they need to guide him in every direction. It's not just like, hey, veteran knows what the scheme is. But you can see Mike Brown yell at Jonathan Kuminga, basically, like, leave Derek White. And he just, when Tatum starts to drive, Tatum has the ball on the left wing, Derek White is on the right wing. When Tatum starts to drive, Kuminga just runs over and doubles. And the ball swings to Derek White, and he bricks a three. And Fred, we mentioned it earlier, 0 of 8 shooting, 0 of 5 from 3 for Derek White, wide open the whole game. So those are the times I do think more energy and more bodies will go towards Tatum. And Derek White's going to have to beat the Warriors, because he's going to have to shoot the Warriors out of that scheme.
Good stuff. My quick stat here, guys, is more individual player focused. And Slater, I'm going to have you pull up this thing I just sent you in the chat room just to make sure my eyes are not deceiving me. Steph Curry against the Celtics, and the theme and the framing here, of course, being that if the Warriors are going to win the title, you got to assume that Steph's got to be, you know, something better than good, probably great. And then, of course, we'll be talking about, you know, the old finals MVP discussion and whether or not he can finally get one. But these numbers, in if you highlight six matchups before the one that he got hurt that we mentioned earlier, where he played just 14 minutes, the totality of those six games, 35.1 points a game, 50% from three, 53.2% overall. Am I tripping here? These numbers are correct, right? Starting with a 49-point game on January 27, 2018 against Boston, and then spanning until December 17th when he has 30 in that game.
I'll tell you what I remember about these games. That 49.1 that starts this torrid stretch against Boston that you're mentioning was like an, I believe it was an ABC Saturday night game, and it was him and Kyrie. It was this, like, unbelievable one-on-one battle where both of them were just hitting ridiculous shots back and forth. The 47.1 was during the pandemic season with the empty arenas, but that was during, you could look, he had 11 threes that night. That was during the greatest three-point shooting stretch by far in NBA history. That is when over four of five games he hit 10-plus threes, which, if there's literally no other player in history who's had four games of 10 or more threes, and he did it over a five-game stretch, that was insane. He had 96 threes in that month. So, you know, he's had some big nights, and I mean,
that's the takeaway, right? Like, yeah. Boston is as versatile as they are, as long as they are, as you know, dominant as they are defensively. He has found a way recently to do what he does at his best.
You know, I rewatched this December game, and Fred, we were talking about earlier, like, you know, Boston was different defensively. They weren't as connected, but, you know, it is the same players out there, and they were losing him a bunch. You know, the Warriors are just doing some of that simple off ball action, and they're looking at each other and pointing, wait, who's supposed to be out there? And Steph Curry's just curling right into a wide open three. Like, there's 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and this is happening. And it's just, I was surprised at how many breakdowns were happening. And, you know, look, it's the playoffs. They're going to be studying the Warriors. They're obviously going to be way more just invested in everything. So I don't expect just those, you know, egregious breakdowns repetitively. But this is a team that you know, has a, like you said, has allowed Steph Curry to get loose, and they don't seem to guard him as well as maybe the reputation suggests.
Well, and I'll finish this question on this interesting note. I also looked up, speaking of, you know, since we're going back a few years, this was a piece I wrote in, when was it? October of 2018. To be honest, I remember having a lot of fun doing this story. I convinced some of the Warriors at the time, and these, of course, is the post-championship Kevin Durant Warriors, to kind of talk about early in that regular season which teams they were quote-unquote afraid of. But you can't tell a player, you know, to talk about fear. So it's like, all right, who do you think, if you had to pick one team, could knock you off? And almost to a man, they were picking the Kyrie Irving Celtics at that time. But this quote, I thought was a trip because some things have changed, but the themes remain. And before I share who said this, this is the breakdown of the Celtics. Boston, they've got a deep team. They've got a collection of talented scorers where it's going to be hard to switch guys. They've got a big man in Horford who can facilitate like Draymond. They've got a great coach, a great atmosphere, a great home court advantage, and a lot of length. Those are usually the teams that give us trouble. That is one Kevin Durant talking about the Celtics at that time, obviously coached by Brad Stevens, not Ime Udoka. But most of those things remain true, no?
Yes. The one thing I would say is like the Warriors pretty collectively love Kyrie Irving, including obviously Kevin right. Durant at the time as a fan right, of Kyrie right, Irving. But
that's the rest of it. If you look at the story, it's kind of a trip to read Kevin. I have him on Kyrie and on James Harden at the time, which is kind of interesting to look back on.
Well, and Sam, as you know very well, it is not just Kevin who does that. What is Andre Iguodala's opinion of Kyrie?
Oh, Kyrie thinks it's like Kyrie. I mean, I'm sorry. Andre thinks it's Kyrie and MJ for the greatest of all time discussion, basically.
So I do think Kyrie's inclusion in that matchup, you know.
All right, fair enough. That. Fair enough. All right, question number three. Guys, we're going to jump to the defensive one, but I'm going to make this.
Let's throw an ad break. Let's tease.
Oh, thank you. Look at you running the ship. Good job, Slater. All right, we got a quick ad break. On the other side, we're going to talk about the defensive side. This has been an extremely defensive focused postseason. The finals are going to be no different. We're going to break that side of the ball down in just a minute. All right, we are back, guys. Let's talk defense with one specific request. Since we don't have a coaching question in here, you know, give me your thoughts within this context on kind of the impact of Steve Kerr and Udoka and how they run their teams on this end of the floor. But the Celtics end the regular season as the top defense in the NBA. Warriors were number two. Since then, the Celtics have gotten better in the postseason in terms of just points allowed per 100 possessions. The Warriors have gotten somewhat significantly worse, actually, just in terms of the numbers. But both very good defenses. How do you think this part of the series is going to go?
I mean, I think Boston has the superior defense, if only because there are just fewer weak links to pick at. And I'm assuming that, like, even if Robert Williams isn't 100%, he's still good out there. And even if Marcus Smart is not 100%, he's still good out there. Like, you still get capable, decent versions of these players in terms of their baseline health. And then if they're healthy, then I think it's Boston for sure. We're just... Golden State, especially when they play that small lineup, they're a little scabs you can pick at. You can screen Jordan Poole until you get Jordan Poole on the guy who you want him to go at, and you can have Tatum try to go at him, or have Brown try to go at him, or have whomever try to go at him, and you can kind of do a similar thing with other guys on that roster as well. Whereas with Boston, it's like Miami was trying to go at Derek White, and it's like, yeah, Derek White is your weakest defender, literally their weakest defender. Like, he was just, Jimmy Butler was just muscling him because, you know, Butler's so strong. But like, Derek White is a good, capable defender. Like, it's really hard to matchup hunt against them. I think that's why they tend to fare out pretty well in close games when the game kind of devolves into, all right, we're going to match up on your guy. You're going to match up on our guy. And it's just really, really hard to pull that off against Boston when they have all those good defenders out there. And it's basically any lineup construction. Like, Peyton Pritchard is the one guy who they play who I'm like, okay, you can go with that guy, but their bigs are excellent on the backside. Even if you get by their perimeter guys, it's like, Grant Williams has become such a fantastic defensive big on the backside too, along with Robert Williams and along with Horford as well. They are so overloaded with above average defenders. And I'm so of the belief that having an entire team of above average defenders is so much more important than having like a bunch of great defenders and a couple of awful ones. Because eventually when you get to the games that matter against the really good teams and the really good offenses, they are going to find ways to seek out those awful defenders. And Celtics just don't have them.
I do think Grant Williams matters in the series, you know, especially if Celtics want to maybe go small and switchy. But look, Boston has been by far the best defense in the league since January 1st. They are, you know, Sam mentioned that rating sustained itself in the playoffs, whereas the Warriors, yes, second in defense in the regular season, they've been the best offense in the playoffs, 116 rating. But you got to remember the matchups that both these two teams played in, right? The Warriors played against better offenses and worse defenses. The Celtics played in this just like gauntlet out east that was just a defensive battle. Their offensive rating isn't near what the Warriors is, but it's a good defensive rating. Like, the Celtics are about to face the best offensive unit they've seen, and the Warriors are about to face the best defensive unit they've seen. So to me, instead of like, it's, I wouldn't really build this as this like, you know, super defensive battle. But the one thing I will say about the Warriors and their versatility and the combinations they can throw out there is there's some cavalry potentially coming back here that does change what the Warriors can do defensively. Gary Payton II, pretty shockingly, is probably going to be back in the early portion of this series, which is huge, especially as I think a guy that you can put on Brown or Tatum. But you mentioned, you know, Jaylen Brown's dribble earlier and at times the sloppy nature of it. Ain't nobody better in the league who can hound that dribble than Gary Payton II. He led the NBA in steals per 36 minutes this season. If you look at the matchup back in December, they needed to, like, when they needed a defensive stop late, they had Payton out there and Andre Iguodala out there. Andre Iguodala had a great game, 2 steals, 2 blocks in that game. He stripped Jaylen Brown to win it off his knee. And Andre Iguodala is getting back in practice this week, and so is Otto Porter. And there's some slight optimism, I'd say, that maybe you'd see all of these guys in this final series. And if you do, the Warriors suddenly have much more just, you know, versatility options to where, to Fred's point, you could throw lineups out there where there aren't really defensive weaknesses.
Slater, I'm probably going to get you aggregated here, but I feel like Iguodala is the one that we haven't had much, if any, clarity on. Folks have been acting like Otto probably, you know, is back. Gary, you guys reported is back, most likely, but where is Andre at?
Yeah, he's been pretty much every time I've seen him over the last few weeks, it's like stationary shooting. You know, it's a lot of issues with the body. Obviously, this might be the last, you know, week or two of his career potentially. But lately it's been this neck issue, this like kind of nerve issue, disc issue, I guess, in his neck that I think it was kind of tough for him to even turn his head at times. So they've been really slow integrating him back. But you did start to see over the last week and a half, like, okay, he's doing a little bit more activity. He was out there during one of the pregames of the conference finals, like getting in a pregame workout, which I hadn't seen in a while. And then Sunday, the Warriors did not practice Sunday. They're practicing Monday. So by the time people are listening to this, they might have a fuller update. But when Steve was talking about guys they want to get back in practice this week and see, Iguodala was grouped into that. So it sounds like they're going to try to get him back in practice. Now, more than the other two, it's going to matter how the body responds, right? Because Andre has come back various times this season, even looked good in a game or two, and then it's like, something's acting up. So he would be the most... I'm the most skeptical of his impact in the finals, but he is Andre Iguodala. So if somehow they get a decent version of him, that changes a lot in the finals, as we've all
seen. He's going to come back and steal finals MVP again.
Oh, no. Peyton, no, that's
Wiggins
coming
award
back.
This year. To just ask Warriors.
Peyton coming back is just so big. Like, when he got hurt, he had just gotten into the starting lineup. And it's not... He's unbelievable. Like, I covered him in Washington. I remember when I was covering him in Washington the whole time, I'm like, I have an affinity for guards who just hound guys and have been 15th men forever. And I just wait for them to find, it's all about fit with those guys. Like, I'm just waiting for Shaq Harrison to be the next Gary Payton II. You just wait for like Javon Carter to finally find it with a contending team that he can help, you know? And Gary Payton II did find it. And he had moved into the starting lineup right before he got hurt. And what's interesting is, like, he is unbelievable guarding the ball, no question. But, like, when he started in that game, you kind of thought, okay, they're going to use him. They're putting him in the starting lineup because he's their best John Morant defender. But then they didn't use him on Durant. They had him, like, on the weak side because he's an unbelievable deflection guy, too, for somebody his height. Normally, like, the greatest deflection guys are you know, in the weak side are, like Ben Simmons, you know, where you have his length, and or Paul George, somebody like that who's just Kawhi. Guys who can just absolutely cut off passing lanes. But Peyton does an unbelievable job there, too, just taking away the corners and getting into passing lanes. You mentioned he led the league in steals per 36. He was second in the league in deflections per 36.
For, like, sure.
The guy is just if he played enough minutes, like, he would be on all defense every right. single year without exception.
Right, right. Guys, my quick thought on the defensive side. The Celtics, to me, have the superior defense. The Warriors have Draymond Green. So I feel like, you know, Draymond, he can't always keep it at level 10. If ever he's going to, you do it in the finals. They can be special on the defensive end when he is running the ship that way. The Jordan Poole thing, you highlighted it, Slater. You know, the Jason Kidd was out here just telling the world that you know, that the Warriors zone obviously was born out of the fact that the Mavs were hunting Jordan Poole, and there was nothing that the Warriors could do about it other than play a whole lot of zone. So that is the kind of vulnerability, like you said, Fred, that the Celtics don't have.
And the Celtics will attack that too. Like, they'll use Derek White as a screener to try to get that stuff to happen. They'll just come in, send him right on the ball and use that stuff as well.
Right.
That is when the creativity of their Warriors schemes will need to help them, where, you know, if it is Derek White as the screener, don't switch that, blitz that. You know, it's Jordan Poole, at least hedge and recover. But, and I know that will be the scheme for the Warriors because they're not afraid of Derek White. So that's when, like, Derek White's, I think, really going to have to, like, score against the Warriors, or else, you know, the Boston will be playing into the Warriors' hands.
Guys, let's breeze through this fourth one real quick, because Slater's got to get to practice. If you got to highlight another role player that you think is going to play a bit of an X factor here, or, you know, just play a role, if pun intended, I guess, that is going to play a part in this series, who comes to mind that could be a difference maker here on each side?
You know, I'm not going to be too creative here because we've talked about most players in this series.
I mean, Fred's is Gary Payton II. I feel like we can just move that segment over.
I think we breezed over Robert Williams' injury issues a little bit much. The guy tore his meniscus in, like, late March, got back really quick. Could you believe, like, when Robert Williams came back?
And he runs down the floor like me getting out of bed in the morning right now.
Like, yeah, you're like, geez, hobbling. Like, in 3 weeks, he's playing off our torn meniscus. Obviously, you know, there are different surgeries that can reduce that timeline, including trimming the meniscus, which doesn't sound very pleasant. But it's clear, like, he is really battling it, because every single game it's knee soreness. He's missed a few games. You mentioned him limping in the last game. He left early in game 6, and that is just not a small factor, because you go and look at the game that the Celtics beat the Warriors, and he had 4 blocks in that game. He was altering a ton more. Like, the Warriors can struggle when there's a rim protector, and they did with Jaren Jackson. Jaren Jackson had 15 blocks in that Memphis series. Dallas didn't. Maxi Kleber didn't scare the Warriors at all, and they were parading to the rim. And Jordan Poole particularly, and maybe I can rope Jordan Poole into this X factor conversation with Robert Williams. If Jordan Poole can get to the rim and not fear somebody coming over weak side to block his shot, the Warriors offense takes it to another level. Robert Williams had 2 unbelievable blocks on Jordan Poole in that game, where it's one of those, you know, Poole's doing some of his deke faking, he's getting to the rim, and it's typically a layup, and Robert Williams flies over and just, you know, throws it away. But Robert Williams needs to be healthy to do that. And maybe the spread out nature of the series helps. You know, it doesn't start till Thursday, 2 off days between every game except for games 3 and 4. Like, maintenance will really matter, right? I mean, Sam will probably be at these practices, and we're always asking, you know, how's this guy doing? You know, how's he feeling? But Robert Williams' health to me is just massive in this series.
Agreed. Fred, what do you got?
I'll answer with the other side of what Slater was just saying. I'm going to say Grant Williams, because if Robert Williams is not looking himself, that's going to put a lot of burden, or more burden than usual, on Grant Williams, who who has really become an incredible defensive big man. And the difference between him and William and Robert Williams, I got to use full names in this one, between him and Time Lord, is that Time Lord is this incredible rim protector, and he's quick, he's athletic, he's versatile, but his value is defending the rim. Where Grant Williams' main value is his ability to just be able to kind of switch and guard away from the rim and guard in front of the rim as well. And that switching ability is going to be so important against an offense like Golden State. So if Robert Williams is not looking like himself and you have to play Grant Williams 25 to 30 minutes and he's out there and he can hit threes and he's guarding on these switches capably, that's going to mean the world to the Boston defense. So I'll say Grant Williams. He's an underrated player. He's really become really good.
No question. All right, my quick one is he's definitely not a role player, but because of his history the last couple of years, Klay Thompson and his defensive ability in this series, I think, is going to be interesting to watch because he's had moments where he's hanging in there. He's not the guy that he used to be. He's trying to get it back on that end. But we've seen that he can be the guy that he used to be when it comes to going, you know, just crazy. And you know, it's not just game six Klay anymore. He joked the other night about maybe it's game five Klay too. I mean, he offensively can just put a team to bed, go night-night like Steph likes to say. But the defensive side is going to dictate – some of what the Warriors are able to do. So I think that'll be interesting. Guys, on the other side of this break, we will do the finals question. We are going to talk, I know it's cliche, but it can be fun. We're going to talk legacy a little bit on both sides of this thing and spin it forward with predictions and essentially just analyze what it means for each of their reputations if they can pull this thing off. We'll be right back.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, gents, let's talk legacy. And I don't want to just focus on the dudes who have been in the finals 6 of the last 8 years. I mean, there's legacy stuff in question. It, you know, legacy is synonymous for reputation, basically, right? And so Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you know, heretofore known as and Marcus Smart as the group that, you know, could never get past the conference finals. They finally did. They are here. You have some greater historical context here as well. And this is the part of me that ends up, you know, covering the Lakers a lot and knowing very well that the Lakers from Jeannie Buss on down were very proud of the fact that they tied the Celtics in all-time championships back in 2020 and got it to 17 apiece. So the idea of Boston, you know, taking the lead in that matchup in terms of league history would be meaningful. The Warriors, of course, trying to add on to this dynasty and to add a wrinkle and a layer that not a lot of people saw coming. Slater, with your Warriors bent, why don't we swing it that way? You know, start with Steph or wherever you wanted to take it, but legacy-wise, what's at stake here?
I mean, from the Warriors side, it's like, you know, historic, all-time, you know, top whatever, you know, we're top teams, top dynasties ever. This is an extension of that. From a player perspective, it's just like polishing up Hall of Fame resumes and Steph Curry vaulting into, like, you know, best point guard in history conversation. And, you know, is he a top 10 type player ever? Like, that's what's, you know, on the line there. You know, the finals MVP thing will probably become a topic at some point deeper in the series if the Warriors look like they might win it. And, you know, if the Warriors win this one, not only obviously, you know, Steph in this core has 4, but I mean, they would, I think they would immediately plant themselves as favorites heading into next season, right? I mean, because they're going to bring this same core back, and they're definitely going to be willing to pay everybody.
Got to pay Looney. Pay Mr. Looney.
Yeah. If they're coming off a title, you know, where Joe Lacob's about to get a, you know, chunk more change just shoveled into that Chase Center barrel, they have a chance to, you know, at least theoretically, like, you know, have the second Bulls type run. You know, they're already have just become the first team since the Bulls to make six finals in over an 8-season period. But man, if they win this one, I mean, cements legacies even further, like I said, but also this has a chance to go somewhere entirely different. Whereas if they lose in Boston, just maybe overwhelms them defensively, we'll probably be going into the offseason with more of a, like, you know, like, are they aging a little bit more than we thought? Like, what can they beat those type of active defenses?
Like Dylan Brooks said, they're getting old. What about the fact that, give me your quick 2 cents on the Durant front. You know, Tim Kawakami wrote about it this week, and I thought it was a good read as always, but the idea that, you know, two championships without Durant potentially, you know, that kind of idea, that as great as Kevin is and was, you know, those two titles, those three finals appearances, inevitably, you know, some credit was taken away from the rest of the group because they went out and got one of the best players on the planet to help him out.
Yeah, I think the way Tim put it is, like, they've made Durant just like a chapter within the legacy of this greatness, which, you know, no other teams really could have, you know, like the Thunder wasn't able to sustain beyond Durant, basically. And it, you know, it is, I mean, they won 73 games without him in an NBA record. They obviously won a title and nearly won two. And this would be quite a stamp for them. I mean, you know, you go back to the Draymond Green comment that, you know, kind of was the beginning of the end with Kevin Durant, when he basically on the bench was like, you know, they figured he was leaving at that point, but it was like, leave, we can win without you. We've shown we can, basically. They are. I mean, you know, does not diminish Kevin Durant's greatness, I don't think, but man, it props up all the other people within this Warriors operation.
Right, right.
Draymond is looking very prescient this week between that comment and just saying on TNT the Boston's going
to
win.
I want him to pick this series. He might, too.
He's going to try to fire his guys up and say Celtics in six.
Oh, wow. Imagine if he came out and did that.
He's saving it for the matchups. I don't know.
Fred, legacy-wise, why don't you try to handle the Boston side a little bit? What do you see at stake for them?
I mean, if they win, it's funny because there have been, you talk about the iterations with Golden State, but Boston's kind of on a run right now that we don't deem a 6-year run because they haven't actually gotten a title out of it. And this is the first time they've been to the finals, but they've been to the conference finals 4 times in 6 years, which is a pretty amazing run, especially considering even though the core guys have been there, Tatum has grown up through that and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, like those guys were all on those teams. But the cores of those teams were totally different. You know, there was the Isaiah Thomas team, and there were the Kyrie teams, and there's the post-Kyrie team. And now there's kind of the team with Tatum and Brown hitting their primes and those guys carrying it. And now Ime Udoka is taking over for Brad Stevens. And I just feel like this run for Boston, first of all, it's so hard to discuss what we're going to see into the future, because we've seen so many teams make runs when they're young and then for whatever the reason, it doesn't continue. But Jason Tatum's 24 years old and Jaylen Brown's 25 years old. And these guys are locked up to long-term deals, and Marcus Smart just extended, and Robert Williams is just extended. And these guys are all locked up. Al Horford's under contract for next year. So, I mean, I feel like whoever wins this title, we're going to come away with saying, okay, well, they're the favorites for next year too. And as for this 6-year run where they've made 4 conference finals, it's going to put those other conference finals in a different light,
a more flattering light.
Exactly.
Right.
We're going
right.
to then all of a sudden
it was
we're
all
talk
part
about,
of a buildup as opposed to falling short.
Exactly. Now all of a sudden it's, wow, remember those Celtics teams that made four conference finals in 6 years and they won a title? It's going to be all part of Jason Tatum's legacy and all part of Jaylen Brown's legacy and all part of kind of the we're just going to look at it differently in that sense. And look, they don't have to get their title this year. Maybe they get it next year or the year after that. And we say, hey, remember when the Celtics made 5 out of 7 conference finals and got a title? It's just that's a lot. That's a lot of conference finals to make in 6 years.
Just one, you know, not all, you know, NBA finals are remembered the same. You know, the recent bubble championship from the Lakers is probably the best example of that against an injured Heat team. But, you know, and Marcus Thompson has talked about this, beating the Warriors is such a feather in Boston's cap potentially, like, you know, that would just add to the weight of this potential championship we're talking about if they take down the Warriors.
Totally. Well, look at what happened to the 2016 Cavs. I mean, different Warriors, 73-1 Warriors, but like similar. That's, yeah. 16 Cavs, like, I'm a huge believer not all titles are created equally. Like that, I'm sorry, that Dirk title in 2011, it just meant more.
Right.
That Spurs title in 2014 after they lost to Miami in 13, right. They,
I agree,
came back and,
for sure,
and all the guys cemented their legacy with another title. Like, that just means more. And the 2016 one, you beat that vaunted Warriors team. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, it depends on how they do it, and we have to see how they live through it. But yeah, beating a team that's made the finals 6 times in 8 years, that would be quite the accomplishment.
All right, Slater's got to get to practice. Let's dive into predictions. Slater, what do you got?
I want Warriors in 7. I think that the fact that home court matters, obviously, and, you know, this rest advantage they'll have entering the series, 3 extra days of rest. They've won all 3 game 1s in these playoffs. They've had the rest advantage. So, you know, you expect them to just be fresher early in the series, getting some bodies back potentially. That, to me, at least tilted the scale a little bit into what I think is going to be a deep series and could go either way.
Mr. Katz.
I'm extremely torn. I've gone back and forth between Boston in 6 and Golden State in 7, just because I feel like if Boston loses game 6, like winning a game 7 on the road against the Warriors in the finals is just like, that's
how about those 2016 Cavs though? Yeah, it's exactly what they did.
Yeah, well, you know, if the Celtics had prime LeBron James, then I would pick them to win that game. I think I'm going to go Celtics in 6 for now, but I have a feeling that like 30 minutes after the podcast ends, I'm going to be like, should have been Warriors in 7. But I'm going to go Celtics in 6 for now, assuming those guys are healthy enough. Their defense is just so impressive. The thing that throws me off is like they have these moments where they just like, they go up 13 with 3.5 minutes left and they give up an 11-0 run. And the Warriors have so much.
You didn't like those 5 Marcus Smart shots in a row?
They will take bad shots. Smart will take bad shots. Tatum will take ill-advised shots. They'll have poor turnovers. And like, man, if the Warriors get off running off of that, like there's no team in the league with the ability to go on crazy runs over 1.5 minutes in more than Golden State can. And that's the thing that keeps throwing me off. And those sorts of mini runs can be the difference in a game, and in a series. But I think it's Boston. I've been so consistently impressed with their defense for the last 4.5 months that I keep going back to them.
All right. I like the variety we have on here. So I am going Warriors, but it's going to be Warriors in 6. I can see them closing out on the road. Man, throat's killing me today. I feel like I'm giving a hat tip, not to what the Warriors have accomplished in the past, but they are showing right now that they, by and large, they are the same crew. And I'm talking about Steph, Clay, and Draymond, you know, with some nuanced differences between now and back in the day. But you add the Jordan Poole component, things like you talked about, Fred, Gary Payton II, Steve Kerr's impact. All that being said, I mean, I go Warriors in 6, and I can 100% see the Celtics winning this thing if they play the best version of themselves consistently enough, if the turnovers are kept in check, if the offensive, you know, droughts are minimal enough that they don't blow a game or two along the way. And I am admittedly very fired up for the environments in these finals. Now, Chase Center has gotten better. It's a fun place to watch a game. I've complained on the pod before about how the press seating is pretty far away. In fact, I know the listeners can't see on video here, but right next to me, gentlemen, look what just showed up in the mail. Sam got his new binoculars for Chase Center. I'm ready.
Wow.
I want to get in and see what's happening. You can't see the bench from where we sit, whatever. But the whole environment at Chase is great. The crowd's been, you know, pretty lit so far. The Boston side, you know, first finals since 2010. That place is special and unique any day of the week anyway. But that, you know, the parquet, the history, you know, last time they were doing this thing, it was Kobe Bryant's Lakers on the other side, you know, a pretty epic series in its own right. And so, you know, you talk about a home court edge. I mean, shoot, I somehow got the Warriors winning this thing in six on that Boston floor. You know, but that's going to be tough. And I think environment wise, it's going to be pretty special.
6 p.m. tips on the West Coast, which, you know, on weekdays, brutal. I don't think the Warriors love because it's a late arriving crowd. Game two will be on a Sunday at 5 p.m. here. That should be fine because it's a Sunday. But the big one, Boston. Boston's getting 9 p.m. tips.
Right.
That could get a little wild.
We're going to be right until 4 in the morning, brother.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. That was a lot of fun. Looking forward to these finals, and we will be back with you next week. Thanks, everybody.